Some said it was the last act of terrorism the human race ever perpetrated on themselves. Some said it was a stroke of genius that got out of hand. Some said it was inevitable, merely mankind's vanity and sense of self-importance finally bringing its just rewards. In the end, it didn't matter what it was. It was the end of the world as mankind knew it. It has been said that society is only 3 meals away from anarchy. It turned out to be truer than anyone knew. That little snippet I just read was the very introduction of the prologue to a book called Morning Star by Jade Falconer. Jade Falconer is actually a pseudonym of a pair of folks, one of which happens to be a friend of mine, who told me that her book was coming out, that she had been working on it, and they finally got a publishing deal on it. So I thought I would interview her and talk a little bit about the process, and also talk about some of the other stuff that they've done or are doing, just to give you guys an idea of what went into it. I guess I should also start by giving you a little bit of background. They started out writing fanfic or fan fiction. In general, there are two major kind of categories of fan fiction. The first is usually based on existing fictional characters, either from a series of novels or a television show or, you know, some other movie franchise or something similar to that. In this case, you usually take these existing characters and either group them with other characters in their particular franchise or even characters from other, you know, other shows or other books, and basically give them a setting and a plot. You can either base it on their original story and, you know, maybe just change relationships or that sort of thing. Or you can even put them entirely different situations, you know, throw Harry Potter onto the Friends set or something like that. No matter how strange it sounds, it's probably been done. The other large overall category of fan fiction involves famous personas. In this case, you can take a famous person, someone that you find entertaining, and either loosely base or even closely base a character in a plot on them. You can time shift them or space shift them or even leave them right where they are and just change who they're interacting with. There's just as many possibilities with these as with the fictional characters, really. Both sorts of fiction have their own little issues that you have to worry about. Obviously, in the case of basing it on someone else's fictional characters, you have, you know, copyright and trademark type infringement to worry about. Basically, you better never sell any of your works. For the most part, the authors don't enforce the copyright outside of that, you know, as long as you don't try and publish anything, simply because they know that it's a fan activity. It's something that builds interest in their franchise. I mean, for instance, the Harry Potter series has a huge, huge fan fiction base. And while J.K. Rowling is very protective of her trademarks and copyrights, she seems to be somewhat more lenient about the fan fiction world. When you're dealing with the famous people, you have a different set of issues. The biggest, obviously, being, you know, things like the potential of slander or defamation type issues. Again, you basically just don't want to publish any of it. Because that would draw attention. But for the most part, as long as you don't do anything too terribly scandalous, you're probably okay.
Well, I think that's enough of the legalities of fan fiction. Let's get on to the actual interview.
Thank you. though, I guess I wanted to start with some information about your, I guess, history as a fan fiction author. So when you're writing fanfic, what are some of your favorite subjects that you usually like writing about? Either, you know, things that you're fanning or even like subject matter within them.
Right. Well, I have a long history of being a fan. I wrote my first fan fiction, I think, when I was around 14.
So just a few years ago.
That was about the Beatles. And then I wrote some about Rocky Horror. And right along, I've preferred writing with someone else. It just flows better when you have that instant gratification of feedback from another person. But I have written some things on my own. The last few years, I started really getting into Harry Potter because there's such a diverse amount of subjects within that work, even with the books. There's 6 books now, so there's thousands and thousands of pages to go on.
Good source for material.
Yeah.
And lots of other writers to be inspired by, too.
True. There's certainly plenty of Harry Potter fan fiction out there. Let's see. Subject matter-wise, I have a tendency to write what they call slash fan fiction, which is 2 male characters, usually involved in some sort of romance, frequently with graphic sexual content, because
gasp.
That's what I enjoy reading. So, again, I'm not alone in that either. Since being into Harry Potter, I met another writer, Jade, who also wrote what they call RPS, which is Real Person Slash, which is based on famous people, basically. So we started writing some of that together, and we just went crazy with that. And a lot of times when you're writing real people, you can, it's a short step from writing about 2 real people to writing original characters based on the physical representation of those real people, which makes you get into original writing completely.
That works. It's kind of a good evolution there. It's sort
yeah.
of a natural step. Well, you already kind of mentioned that you like working with other people and that kind of thing. What else do you, I guess, find easiest or like best about the process of writing either your fan fiction or your normal fiction?
I found over the years that I'm happier when I'm writing, whether it's original fiction or fan fiction. It's just something I enjoy doing constantly. And when you when you're not doing it, the ideas that you get in your head for plots and things like that kind of accumulate and make you crazy. of course, right now I'm to a point where the ideas are coming slower than the actual writing because we're writing such a volume of stuff that sometimes we're actually to the point where we have to sit and think about what we're going to write next and sort of brainstorm plot lines. But yeah, I don't know what else to say about that.
So it's kind of a venting method of sorts. It's a way to self-purge almost.
It is. I think just to a certain extent, well, do you know what Mary Sue's are?
Yeah.
It was originally a term coined in Star Trek fan fiction, which I think it was probably the first fan fiction, where you'd have Lieutenant Mary Sue, who was the Kirk's long-lost love or whatever, and it was basically the author putting themselves in the fiction as a self-gratifying sort of thing. And that's extremely frowned upon in fan fiction, certainly. But I think to a certain extent, all fan fiction and probably all regular fiction incorporates the author into the story in some sense. So everything's a Mary Sue.
Yeah, it's just some are more subtle than others.
Right.
Hopefully.
It's better to be as subtle as possible. That's why it's, when you're writing male-male fan fiction, it's easy to be subtle because I'm not a male.
That is true. And generally, you don't share a name with any of the subjects. I've noticed that in a few where it's like, you know, by John, and just so happens that there's one of those in the story. I'm like, that's probably a little bit too obvious. Just
right.
just a little. Let's see. I have a question for you that, and this is actually kind of inspired by my sister, because she actually writes some, and she found that she was writing with a writing partner, and I think it was on Labyrinth, as I recall. Mm-hmm. And she said that they did an experiment, and they wrote, because my sister is older than I am and probably writes pretty decent quality stuff, not your standard, you know, run-of-the-mill fan fiction, probably something closer to yours. And she, with this other writer, they did an experiment, and they wrote back and forth in the kind of 13-year-old girl method. You know,
right.
In my little list here, I called it teen girl giggle fic, because it's pretty much just like it's just written as you would imagine a teenage girl thinking. And she said that that was one of the most popular stories that the two of them ever wrote.
Right.
Which I found kind of amusing and depressing all at once, really.
Well, with fan fiction, you got to understand that there's a good chance that a sizable portion of your audience are 13-year-old girls.
That is true.
So, you know, there's something to be said about that. You know, when you're writing something and you're striving to write something worthwhile and something, you know, that uses the full range of the English language, that you're doing for yourself. You're not necessarily, well, I mean, all of it's for yourself. For me, anyway. I mean, we never
greedy.
Thought we'd get published. you know, it's basically, I think fan fiction authors write what they like to read. So, I guess, I don't know. I think that it can be fun to write something really ditzy and, you know, silly and
just as a break.
Simplistic sometimes. I've often thought that actually the only things that I actually enjoy reading like that are ones that are sort of parody of that kind of writing style, because sometimes those can be very funny.
When they're doing it all on purpose. Yeah.
Right.
And that, I guess that kind of goes along with the you mentioning that it's, you know, you write for you, goes along with another thing that my sister mentioned, was that basically a lot of it is kind of escapist. It's
definitely.
Either you invent it because you wanted to see, you know, something happen between those two characters, or in the case of a Mary Sue, where you're putting yourself in it, you know, you wanted to experience that or whatever. So it's, I mean, guess all fiction is that way. Both reading fiction and writing fiction are pretty much, that's the point.
One comment that we've gotten frequently from people who read our fan fiction, that it's funny that this comment comes up so just over and over again, people say the same thing. I wish I had a relationship like that. You know, they'll be reading about our characters and they'll just be, wow, I wish I was in love like that, or I wish, you know, I had a boyfriend like that, or, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, you're escaping into, for us, it's definitely the emotional content, the relationship between two human beings connecting on some really intense level that I don't think that either of us have found in real life. So
that is
and
true.
The older I get, the less I believe it actually exists.
That it's just an ideal that people set and often
right.
never meet.
Yeah, but you know, when you're writing fiction, you can have that grand once-in-a-lifetime soulmate romance thing that everybody secretly wants, but no one really gets.
Exactly. Well, let's see. Speaking of once-in-a-lifetime romances, soulmates, I guess we could move on to your book. That's almost a good segue. That's pretty scary. Because that's exactly what that is. Do you want to kind of...
By design.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to kind of set that up for us? Just, you know, so I don't give away the whole story and then people won't go out and buy it.
Well, it's set in a sort of post-apocalyptic future where either a computer virus or, you know, they're not exactly sure what caused the power to just shut down. And it was originally, the germ of the idea came from the saying that the human race is only 3 days away from anarchy, meaning that, you know, if society broke down within 3 days, people would just go nuts and there'd be no law and order. So in this post-apocalyptic world, it's about 100 years after this terrible tragedy had happened. And before the world broke down, vampires existed, but there was so many humans to vampire ratio that no one really believed in them. They could easily be underground.
Mm-hmm.
After the disaster, humans were dying left, right, and center. So 100 years later, the human race is a fraction of what it once was, and of course, the disaster didn't affect vampires, so there are the same number of them as there ever were. So it's a lot more difficult to hide. In this world, the only source of order are the vampire hunters, because they're the only thing protecting human beings from the main predator that they face, other than hunger and disease and starvation, which no one can really do anything about. So
yeah,
the vampire hunters, yeah, and they have no infrastructure to protect them from those things, but they can protect themselves from vampires to a certain extent. So the protagonist of the story is a vampire hunter. He's been at for a decade and outlived all the other vampire hunters he's ever worked with. For some reason, he's just better at it. He just has an instinct for it. But after 10 years, he's grown rather cynical, and he figures his time is running short, and he actually gets almost caught by a vampire. But he's not really afraid of death, and I think that's the initial attraction between the two of them. He knows who the vampire is and what their life is about, but he confronts it with courage, and there's a spark of attraction between the two of them, and it goes on from there. I won't say anything else about what happens between them, but I'm sure you can imagine.
As I did, yes. let's see. You said it's about 100 years after the disaster.
Right.
And, of course, could be 100 years from today, really, or not much more than that.
Right.
What city did you base it on? I was kind of curious about that when I was reading, or any... Los Angeles, okay.
Yeah. In fact, I think that at one point we had that famous movie theater in there, but we didn't really name it specifically.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jade lives in San Diego, and a lot of our stuff is based around Los Angeles just because it's such a centralized hub where most of the people that we write about are located.
Yeah, and if they ever get made into movies, it's easy to do on-site filming.
That's true.
Very convenient. Planning ahead.
Yep.
Let's see, you already kind of mentioned this, but you kind of visually base your characters on real people for the most part, right? And then and then just kind of add on as you go.
Right. Well, you know, we don't base their personalities, you know, necessarily on, at least not for, I mean, for the fan fiction, of course we do, but for the real fiction, we make up their character. It's just their physical appearance that we're basing on other people. And just, I'm sure everyone does that.
To an extent, yeah. It just kind of gives you a visual picture or a piece of this person and, you know, the hair color of that person and the 14 piercings of that other person, you know, who knows? whose vampires did you base your style on? I mean, I noticed some things that I hadn't read in other people's stuff. But I mean, are there any, you know, particular other authors whose vampires you stole?
No, but I'll tell you, vampires has long been a favorite fictional topic of mine, and I have read many a vampire book, and I've probably absorbed vampire details from far and wide. Of course, obviously, I've read the Anne Rice books. There was one really great vampire book by George R.R. Martin, who was actually the person who wrote the Beauty and the Beast TV show, which I never watched, but it was called Fever Dream, which had really appealing vampires in it. But like I said, I've read so many vampire books, I can't even remember them all. How could I not mention Dark Shadows?
True.
A huge Dark Shadows fan, and has written many pages of Dark Shadows fan fiction in the past as well. I think that vampire lore has sort of crystallized into a standard set of things, so you're not necessarily stealing from any one person. You're kind of stealing from the Hollywood ideal of what vampires are.
Yeah, it's just a matter of maybe, you know, which features you emphasize and stuff like that, really, at this point, because pretty much everything has been done, not done, but yeah, you're right. It's pretty much a standard, okay, this is a vampire, you can do a little bit more with this, you know, things like one thing that I noticed, yours, they can eat, but it just sort of upsets their stomach if they eat too much.
Right.
Much like us, actually. It's just that the limits
are
a little bit different.
That was probably an Anne Rice thing, actually.
Well, hers, they...
I think hers...
I don't ever remember them mentioning it, say, upsetting them, just that they didn't digest it.
Right.
Oh, I was impressed, and I think I mentioned this to you before. Your editor apparently needs a raise, because I noticed fewer errors in your book, like only one, actually, than I did in my literature class. I'm reading a book that's by one of the instructors, and admittedly, it's, you know, 500 pages, but noticed significantly more errors, probably on an error per page basis. So that's pretty impressive.
That's great.
You have a good editor.
Be sure to pass that along.
Yep.
She'll be happy to hear that. I don't know how she does it. She goes through so many books.
Obsessive compulsive?
Maybe, I don't know.
Mildly, maybe. Detail-oriented, I guess, is the nice way to put that, right?
Hopefully she doesn't get too many errors going into it from us, anyway.
Well, yeah, that's true. You have the advantage that you've got two people looking at it already. So, you know, you probably see stuff in Jade's stuff and then she sees stuff in yours, that if you were just reading it yourself, you tend to fill in the blanks with things.
Right.
So that's always good. So you have several layers of editing by doing that. So that is a pretty big plus. Another interesting thing about your book is kind of the way it's being distributed. You're going electronic first, right? And then eventually it's going to be either published as is or in a similar form on actual real paper, dead tree format.
Yes, yes. The dead tree format. We're looking forward to the paperback coming out next year.
Mm.
Hopefully as soon as possible.
That would be close.
Actually, we have already written the sequel to Morningstar, and it's in the editing process. We're hoping that the two will be combined for the print version, so it'll be a little heftier. And also because the first one is, it's not a cliffhanger really, but it sort of is.
Well, but see,
I don't want to say that, turn people off.
That way you would, you know, sell two books. You know, you're supposed to do that at the end of books.
Well, the second one's coming out as an ebook first.
Okay.
It'll actually be three books.
You're gonna like ruin my ebook budget.
Well, that's why you should buy the second book. It only cost $2.
Exactly. Yeah, the one that's the one that's currently number one, right? On
yes, the number one bestseller on FictionWise.com's erotica bestseller list.
See, that's not so bad. And you said today that you were number eight overall?
Yes, number eight of all of FictionWise ebook authors of all genre fiction.
So that combines both books, right?
Well, yes, I guess it does. I was excited to see that there were actually some real famous authors in that list. Mercedes Lackey was number five. She's a science fiction writer. Jane Ann Krentz is a romance novel author, but she was number seven, and we were number eight. So that was a bit of a thrill today.
Now, see, you know you've made it, though, when people start writing fan fiction based on your novels. That'll
Someone
be impressive.
Is already role-playing based on our first book.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and people have mentioned that they would be interested in writing fan fiction based on Morningstar. But that would be cool as hell.
A little twisted, maybe, but yeah, cool. That would be really. That would be
well,
really
hey, I'm good with that. There's some authors who are just crazed about copyright infringement and sending cease and desist or letters and stuff like that. I do not care. Go ahead and enjoy.
You're perfectly fine with that.
Totally fine. It's flattering.
Well, and one other good thing that I noticed about Morningstar, anyways, is that while it is technically erotic fiction, it actually has fiction.
And yes,
plot
there's a plot.
And things like that in it, as opposed to just being primarily the erotic part. So it makes it more interesting to read, that's for sure.
Right.
And even broadens the market, because just about anybody could read it, even if they don't normally read that genre. So it would be a decent vampire story. I mean, because probably you might go into a little bit more detail, but there's not that much more eroticism than there are in any of Anne Rice's books. I mean, some
of her
books are pretty...
Pretty racy.
Pretty racy, yeah, particularly when you get into Armand. And stuff like that.
Oh,
so.
Oh, really? I haven't read Armand. I need to read it.
I think so. I think. Well, and I guess it's Lestat where they actually go into part of Armand's life and what goes on there. But
yes.
I think the Vampire Armand book, as I recall, is a little bit more interesting. So,
I thought you were going to say the Sleeping Beauty trilogy, but that's almost straight erotica anyway. That has no more plot than we do, surely.
Possibly not. That's true. One other weird thing I noticed about Morningstar is that in this future time, because there are, basically 10 times as many men born as women?
Yeah.
They've outlawed homosexuality, which
right.
for me seems backwards, because it still takes women 9 months to give birth, I presume, which
right.
means that the men have even less to do for 9 months. I would think there would be a huge underground scene going on there.
And really, when you think about it, if there were 10 times as many men as there were women, men would most certainly be in charge, and therefore homosexuality would not be outlawed.
Although, maybe it's... It would sort of depend, because men being in charge and men being men and the initial majority being straight, exactly, I could see that happening. They would be like, well, we don't want people doing this. We can handle it. So, yeah, I guess so. I guess there are both sides of it. But, yeah, when I read that, I was like, well, that doesn't seem quite right.
Well, I tell you, it's sort of, here's what my initial thought about that was there was a Star Trek Next Generation episode where there was a society that was dying out. When they eventually got them straightened out with whatever problems they were having other than that, they advised them that the best course of action to repopulate their species was that every woman should have at least have a child by at least three different men.
For genetic diversity.
Exactly, genetic diversity. And that's kind of what I was thinking with this, that the most important thing was to repopulate, because the more human beings there were, the more chance they would have of all surviving.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it was important to make women more attractive, shall we say, by making homosexuality illegal.
Sort of a reverse Mormonism.
Kind of.
Where instead of having multiple wives, you would have multiple husbands.
Yeah, polyamory.
Sounds not so bad to me. Well, you did mention your sequel. Did you pick a title yet?
Or yes.
Is that still top secret?
It's called Sanctuary. It's not a secret.
Oh, okay. You co-write with someone in San Diego, and you're in one of those obnoxious northeastern states. And
New York.
Kind of pretty much the opposite corners of the United States. Well, you could be in Maine, I guess. That would be further. How do you go about doing that?
At a certain point, I got a sidekick. Shortly after that, Jade got a BlackBerry. And when that happened, our writing really took off, because we could email back and forth at any time from any place. So that's what we do, basically. We both email back and forth while we're at work, when we're driving in the car. I have a personal rule that I will not text anyone if I'm driving over 80 miles an hour. We've been standing next to each other at rock concerts during obnoxious opening bands, emailing back and forth while standing next to each other.
Well, at a rock concert, that's about the only way to communicate anyways.
That's
true. You certainly can't scream at each other.
I think it was, we were at an AFI show. I remember this one time specifically. We're at an AFI show in Philadelphia. And during that part of the tour, I don't know if you've ever heard of the band Dillinger Escape Plan.
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
They are really loud and really obnoxious and completely atonal. So all during Dillinger Escape Plan, we were writing back and forth. Even when we're hanging out with each other, we'll be writing emails back and forth on our little devices, just because it's easier for her to save stuff. She has all the emails. She does all the hard, tedious stuff of collecting everything and putting it all in an actual document. And going over it with a fine-tooth comb and editing it.
And thank goodness for time and date stamps, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Especially when they don't go through and we end up sending the same thing over and over again because the other person hasn't gotten it yet. And then we end up getting like 10 at the same time of the same thing. That can be a little annoying.
So your editors have to be careful about repeating paragraphs.
Definitely.
This whole page is in here four times. I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah, it's usually only going to be a paragraph at a time. That's what we pretty much... That's one thing I might want to mention when we're talking about writing style, is that we've had a couple of... some of our reviewers have mentioned that they found the switching point of views disconcerting. That's kind of a fan fiction standard. I know that it's not technically, when you're learning how to write fiction, you're told in school that you should only be in one person's head at a time. So like in a scene, in one scene, you should only be in one person's point of view. But we, in a scene, we'll be in both of them's point of view. We've been experimenting lately with not doing that, but it's just more gratifying for us, and we think it's more gratifying for our readers, so that's what comes naturally, and if it's not the standard that most classical fiction goes by, then that's just too bad.
Well, you're not classical fiction then. That's, you know, that fixes that problem. Yeah, I do know that there are other authors that do that, but usually, yeah, it's on a chapter basis. You know, there's a really clear break where it happens. But I did notice that with Morningstar, it's maybe a couple paragraphs, and then it'll switch and back and forth. So
right. For
shorter stuff, you know, if you were writing War and Peace type length stuff,
right. That
probably would get frustrating or strange.
Right.
But I think
I tell you. We have, one of the reasons we've been experimenting with point of view lately is, besides reading fan fiction and vampire books, one of the other things I've read a lot of are romance novels. And generally speaking, the convention in romance novels is that the whole first half of the book is in the heroine's point of view. And you have absolutely no idea what's going on in the thoughts of the hero until it makes that break, and then you sort of get a little glimpse into what he's thinking. And the reader almost expects that to happen. So it's easier to be in the heroine's place, to put yourself in her place, because you don't know what's going on in the other person's head. But then it's when you eventually do, it's such a relief. It's like a little prize. You know?
Peeking
like
behind.
In real life, you could read someone else's thoughts, you know, it would be like, oh.
Yeah, you get to peek behind
finally.
The curtain.
Exactly. So, you know, there's that sort of, that pacing of putting that off, of putting off what, you know, what's going on in the other person's head until further into the book, has its appeal. So we're experimenting with that also.
Well, I think I covered everything that I wanted to pry out of you. Is there anything that you wanted to, anything else that you wanted to volunteer that I didn't manage to prod you for?
Well, we have two other full-length books that have been accepted by the publisher that are coming out that I would like to speak about briefly.
Okay.
One of them is called Tangled Web, and it was actually the first book we wrote together. It was unique in that we weren't looking to get it published necessarily, and we certainly weren't looking for an erotica publisher specifically. So one of our goals was to try to postpone the sexual content for as long as we possibly could, dragging it out, you know, and teasing for, you know, many chapters. So when we actually got this book accepted, one of the things we had to do was find some way to get some sex in the beginning of the book. Because there was none for, I don't think they even kiss until halfway through the book.
That yeah, you might lose the standard erotica reader, author, or reader audience
right. By
then, yeah.
But the third book that we wrote, which is actually, I think, coming out third, called Wicked Game, is just sex all the way through. It's just sex almost from page one.
The opposite end of the spectrum.
Exactly. It's just the characters just went at it, you know. We couldn't stop them. It was just such a completely different plot that it was, the relationship started off as being just sex and evolved into more. Whereas in the other book, it started off being sweet and flirtatious and innocent. And the sex was almost, you know, just an end product of a relationship coming to fulfillment.
One of the I guess, sites that my sister pointed me to was a Missy Reimer, I don't know, it's R-E-I-M-E-R, who writes this little guide on, I guess, how to write fanfic. And one of the things that popped out at me in her guide was she said something to the effect of, unless you're in the top percent of the top percent and lucky to boot, no one's going to read your fanfic and offer you a book deal. So I guess I should congratulate you on being in the top percent of the top percent and lucky. And maybe you should like buy some lottery tickets too. You know, since you went out and are getting published, that's actually pretty cool. So,
yeah. Well, we didn't actually have somebody, you know, read our fanfic and offer us a
just
book deal.
Call you up.
Hunted them down and wrote to many, many, many of them.
Pestered them until they gave in.
That's right. We harassed them nonstop. So.
Well, I think that's how it really works. But see, and that's what's important.
Yep.
And you know, it's not like, you know, a 10-year exclusive contract or anything, right? So, you know, when Random House calls you up next week, you're okay.
Definitely. Except we don't have anything lying around that hasn't been accepted already. when we first sold our first book, we had, you know, we had three other books sitting around waiting, doing nothing. So, now they've accepted all of those and a couple of short stories to boot. So
it's time to start reaccumulating.
Exactly. But we've got time. I mean, the third book we actually wrote during, this is a sort of a fan fiction type thing. The month of November is, I don't know if you've heard of this, is National Novel Writing Month.
Yes,
which
I have.
Is shortened online to NaNoWriMo. And we started writing the third book that's coming out at the beginning of November, just randomly, not because we were doing NaNoWriMo. And we finished it in 15 days. So all these people were posting things on their blogs about how they were, like, sweating through trying to grind out these, you know, megabytes of words, and they were just struggling with it, and we weren't even doing it, and we like finished the whole book in 2 weeks.
Well, but does it have what's the limit they put on that? Is it 10,000 words or something like that? No, it's
sure.
More than that.
I've never done that, but you know,
you cheated.
And
you
I
had
don't
two
even
people.
Know how many words are. Well, that's true, but we, I guess then it was fair because it was twice as many authors, we should get it done in half as much time, which we did.
That's true. That is true. So you said you've got two more books coming soon. When are they going to be the ones that have been accepted?
Well, there's actually three. There's Sanctuary, which is the follow-up to Morningstar,
mm-hmm.
Tangled Web, and Wicked Game. And they're both coming out in 2007. We also have a short story that's been accepted as part of a compilation with two other male authors, three short stories in one book of all homoerotica. You might want to pick that one up.
Yeah, I might have to. I'll keep an eye out for that one. Well, thank you for your time. I hope to talk to you again soon.
I look forward to it.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Since I opened with the prologue to Morningstar, I figured I would close with a chapter later on in the book. This is chapter 9. I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and maybe I'll talk to you soon. Thanks. Daniel sat in the locker room for a long time. He sipped the coffee from his old and chipped mug. He'd made a terrible mistake. A critical mistake. It was very bad. When he went out tonight, he wouldn't be hunting the undead, creatures who fed upon the living, sucking the lifeblood from them, monsters. When he went out tonight, he would be killing people. Real people, with real needs and loneliness. All his moral compass points were wiped out with that all-too-brief encounter. Now it was simply kill or be killed. He tried to put it in historical perspective, culling the predators for the survival of both. Was that what he was doing? If the human race was wiped out, the vampires wouldn't last long after. The humans, however, could live without the vampires. There would be other predators, other plagues, and hardships. The battle would still be all uphill. But his life had just gotten much more dangerous. If he went out into the night and hesitated, second-guessed himself, he would be dead in a week, just like all the others. He had to put Scott from his mind and just pray that he stayed well clear of anywhere Scott might be. He wasn't sure if he would kill Scott, or simply surrender to him, drop his crossbow, and bare his throat, and let himself become one with his fallen comrades. The fact that he didn't know scared the shit out of him.